The RPG After Years is part of the We Can Make This Work Probably Network. Find out more at probablywork.com.
Hi, I'm Evan, and I sure enjoy me some podcasts.
Wow,
this podcast sure is enjoyable.
But sometimes, life has a little bit more pegged on for you than what you thought.
Oh man, is that a missile?
I'm okay.
ThoughtsCast, part of the We Can Make This Work Probably Podcast Network.
Welcome to the RPG After Years, your weekly show covering all things RPGs from the past, present, and future. This is a bonus episode. I'm Scott, and it's just me today. I'm here today all by my lonesome to bring you guys a second opinion review on the original Grandia. What a classic tune there, huh? maybe the most memorable thing about the game. But anyway, so you may think this is kind of weird that it's just me. But basically, since we're on an off week this week, due to Thanksgiving, and to be honest, we had some editing troubles with the last episode we recorded that has not gone public yet. I figured it might be nice to provide you guys with a little extra content this week. We did already put out part one of our The Last of Us review that Jay, Corey, and I did that was formerly Patreon exclusive, but we wanted to put some kind of content out, and you know, to be honest, also maybe by only putting out part one, entice you guys to take another look at our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/RPGAfterYears, by the way. But anyway, basically how this came about was in the Golden Years day, before we switched over to the After Years, once the Grandia HD collection came out on Switch, Bill and Rich sort of did a haste of those two games, Grandia and Grandia 2, to where they played those immediately. And that sort of established like the whole precedent of the Golden Years. Whenever a Golden Years list game was re-released, that they would go ahead and play that game while people were, you know, talking about it again. They did the same thing with the Final Fantasy VIII HD remaster, which I've also still not played. But anyway, I was familiar with Grandia 2 when this came about, and I was interested in also playing Grandia 1. So I started playing Grandia as well, along with Bill and Rich, but I wasn't able to really keep up with them. I know it's weird, because sometimes it takes them, you know, freaking forever in a day to finish a game. And then other times, it's basically, if they're enjoying the game, they'll just fly through it. And Corey, my fiance, was not really into the game. It was a little bit too old school for him. So that meant I could only really play the game, you know, on my own free time, which I don't have too terribly much of it, too much of, you know, free time. And I fell behind. And then once they, you know, did their review, I was like, well, I kind of lost my motivation to keep playing the game, even though I was, you know, generally enjoying it. And I started playing Grandia 2 instead, which I did actually make it through. And you can go back in the After Years catalog and find those reviews. Let's see if I can find what episode number those are, if you're interested in that. But I did want to say that, like I said, Bill and Rich did already do a review on Grandia. So that was episode 69 and 70. I just listened to those myself. They did a pretty good job. And then the Grandia 2 review was more recent. And by the way, 69 and 70, by the way, 69, nice. That was of the Golden Years episode. So you'll have to go back quite a ways to see those. But the Grandia 2 review was episodes 21 and 22 of the After Years. But anyway, I never wanted to stop really playing Grandia 1. I still always intended to finish. It just took me a long time before that was my top priority to go back to and, you know, actually finish. And I finally did, like a week or two ago. So yeah, I wanted to do, like, you know, sort of a second opinion episode, say what I thought about the game, and then revise our official After Years review score. So this is a little awkward because it is just me, like I said, so I'm, you know, doing like kind of verbal diarrhea here, but I am practiced. I did used to have like a YouTube channel, so it's not that off for me, I guess. My intent is to keep this short and sweet. I'm aiming for hopefully no more than 20 minutes, but we'll see how it goes. I can see I'm almost 7 in now. So no more than 30 at least. So it's I'm not going to, like, you know, go over the story in detail beat by beat or like the development history, how Grandia was created. Bill and Rich already did a pretty good job at that. Like I said, back in episode 69. Nice. So without further ado, let's actually move on to the review. Okay. So I did notice when I was listening back to episode 69, that they did not actually do a segment that they always do for their reviews. I'm not sure why. They didn't say what the release date was, or how long ago that was, or what music was at the top of the charts, or any of that. I don't know if they ran out of time, or if Bill just forgot, or what. So I will do that as quickly as I can. The game originally came out in Japan in 1997 on the Sega Saturn. And that was in December. So I don't have an exact date here. Well, I should. But since it's Japan, I'm not too worried about it. It eventually made its way to the US on October 26th, 1999. This time for the PlayStation, the original PlayStation. That was 7,704 days ago. Or 21 years, 1 month, and 2 days. Oof. I didn't actually learn what Grandia was until much later, so that doesn't make me feel too old, but just the fact that the game is that old is, kind of a testament. Like, it still more or less has stood up to the test of time in most regards, I would say, but we'll talk about that more. In Europe, it came out a little later on March 31st, 2000, which was 7,574 days ago, or 20 years, 7 months, and 28 days. And then, of course, the Switch HD Collection came out in 2019, which we were all very excited about. I can remember when that was about to happen. I remember being very, like, worried because the game was originally announced to come out in, like, winter of 2018, I think. And then that came and went, and we didn't get, like, any kind of news about the release or anything. So that was weird, but we did eventually get it. The game was developed by GameOts and published by Sony Computer Entertainment and Gung Ho Online in North America. And in Europe, it was also Gung Ho Online, but with Ubisoft instead of Sony. So, very interesting. So, the music at the top of the charts in the US at the time of its original release, which was, again, October 26th, 1999, was Smooth by Santana featuring Rob Thomas. Dude, my parents like wore this song out. I remember being in the car listening to it over and over. Actually, I like the song, but it's like it triggers some deep like response in me just because it's like so ingrained in my childhood, I guess. I wanted to make sure that line wasn't interrupted by my verbal monologue here. It's an okay song, and I do like Rob Thomas in general. And so in the UK was actually a song that I had never heard of or heard, to my knowledge. It was Bag It Up by, hopefully I'm pronouncing this right, Jerry Halliwell. Kind of dig it though. It's a pretty bopping. if you take the vocals out, I feel like it would right at home in like a mid to late 90s Sonic the Hedgehog game. They went with like this really weird like techno dance floor music around that time in the series. But yeah, I like it. I might actually have to add this to my list here. And then for the movies in the US at the time, it was the movie The Best Man, starring Taye Diggs, Mia Long, and Morris Chestnut, among others. It looked like it might have been like a black family comedy movie. I wasn't too sure. I haven't heard of it, but I'm sure it was fine, at least. And then in the UK, it was a movie we're all probably familiar with, Toy Story 2, of course, starring Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. And many people say that one is the best Toy Story. I'll be honest, it's been so long since I've seen it, I can't really testify one way or the other. But I really liked Toy Story 3 the best, like just the ending and all that. But anyway, so that's it for the history. I wanted to fill in that hole that Bill so, you know, regretfully missed when they did the review. So like I said, I'm not going to do like a full diatribe on every little plot detail, every character on all that. Everything's going to be very general for me this time. So I guess I'll just, you know, sort of throw out my thoughts on some of the characters. Of course, you have Justin, the main character, who is sort of like a dim-witted shonen type protagonist. I think he's supposed to be like 15, but his whole thing is he just wants to go on an adventure. His dad was an adventurer, and so he wants to follow in his footsteps. I could take or leave Justin, I guess. He's likable, I'll give him that, but I also don't really like that archetype of character. Archetype? I'm not sure which is the correct pronunciation. But I don't really have anything against him. I much preferred, it's going to be hard for me not to compare and contrast Grandia and Grandia 2 this whole time, because Grandia 2 is actually my preferred game. I liked it quite a bit more, if I'm being honest. I thought Ryudo was just much more interesting of a protagonist, just like the slightly older cast in that game in general. Of course, you got Sue, who I expected to like hate, but she kind of grew on me. And I think it's because despite her being a little like an annoying little girl, she's the more level-headed of the two between Justin and Sue. Or herself and Justin, I guess. And so it kind of endeared her to me a little bit more. And I will say the part where she gets sick and then you have to send her back to Parm, the town you start out in. I did find that scene sad. I know Rich said in the review that it didn't affect him, but I felt sad having to say goodbye to Sue, especially since we've had her the whole damn game. And so, you know, I've spent a fair bit of time building her up. And then, of course, you got the deuteragonist, Fina, who is Justin's love interest and sort of pivotal to how the story of the game unfolds. I liked Fina quite a bit. I think she was probably my favorite of the central cast. But she there's also like not something super, nothing super interesting about her until towards the end, once you find out that she's a mystical magic lady, basically. It was funny seeing all the scenes where she's sort of like overtly hitting on Justin, and he's just like too slow until towards the end to really pick up on any of it. He's just like, Fina, what are you saying? Oh, and before I go on, I will say the voice acting in this game is generally god-awful. Just absolutely terrible. I think Justin is probably one of the only ones that actually did a decent job. Fina's okay too, but she's kind of hit or miss. And Sue's just like a typical anime girl. I guess there wasn't anything super wrong with hers. Of the remaining core cast, Gadwin, Rap, Milda, Guido, and Liete, none of them really stand out in my mind. I did end up, after I'd been with him a while, liking Rap kind of quite a bit, because he just like is kind of like a bro character. He's like just really cool to Justin in general. I like how he calls him Just. The only thing with Rap was like when he has one of his like little portraits that pops up when he talks that comes up a lot is him picking his nose. And like every time it used that, I was just like, I know he's supposed to be like a Neanderthalish character, but it just was off-putting to me. And like I said, none of these other characters really stand out to me. For Liete, she's like the mystical ancient lady who sort of sets Justin out on his quest. I did think it was very cool that she actually joins the party permanently. But the problem is she doesn't really have any kind of personality to back up her being an interesting character. It's like she stops being interesting as soon as she joins the party, which is unfortunate. For the subcast, we've got General Ball, who is the main villain. I've personally found him to be a very weak villain. He's kind of mysterious at first, like you don't know if he's truly evil, and then of course that becomes clearer as the game goes on. But there's nothing overtly interesting about him. I thought he's not a super great villain either, but I thought the Pope in Grandia 2 was much more interesting, as well as all the Valimar stuff going on in that game. You've got Colonel Mullen, who I also thought was kind of an interesting character because he's sort of set up as a villain, but he ends up being like sort of an anti-hero-ish character. I will say, though, out of all the characters, his voice acting is probably the worst. Just like, I'm sorry, whoever voiced him. Awful, awful, awful. And it's unfortunate because a lot of the scenes that he's in are usually some of the more pivotal moments. So he gets a lot of voiced dialogue. I would say maybe only like Justin and Fina probably get more than him. Lieutenant Lean, who is the love interest of Colonel Mullen and Fina's sister, I actually really liked her quite a bit. I thought she was a very interesting character. If you put it down on paper, there's not that much super cool about her, I guess. But just the way that she's also sort of like an anti-villain, anti-hero character, she sort of helps Justin and Fina out a couple of times, and she sort of goes against the military. That was really cool. And then, of course, you have her sacrifice at the end of the game that was a really cool moment and scene. It was just kind of frustrating because she more or less spells out what Justin and Fina have to do to defeat Gaia at the end, and then it still takes both of them like having to have a couple more epiphanies before they understand. That's basically all the main characters. Of course, you have those that group of three sergeant women who are more like the Team Rocket type villains of the game. I got Nana, Saki, and Mio. I thought they were fun, if, you know, a little shallow. Just looking down the list of other characters, I don't think I need to really call anything else out. As far as like the actual story and the things that, you know, Justin and crew go through, the areas they hit, I did like the opening town. New Parm was really impressive to me. And the music was cool too. The only thing was, right from the beginning, I started having the problem where I could not fucking find my way around towns. I know that you can press select and then that overhead map comes up, which I did figure out quite early. Even that, I still got lost constantly. It was interesting. You know, one thing I will give the story, you're going on an adventure and it definitely feels that way. It feels like you're on an adventure and you never know what you're going to find around the corner, what ancient civilization you're going to unturn, what lore will pop up from the rocks. It was pretty cool. Although it took me way too long to understand that the Icarians and the Angelonians and Alent, the relationship between all those, it's like, well, really the Icarians don't have much to do with Alent. It's just the Angelo people knew about them, I guess is what I took away from it. But what are you going to do? So running down the list here, I'm just calling out things that stand out in my mind. All the scenes before you join up with Liete, all those scenes where she like sort of shows you glimpses of the past and like more lore, those are pretty cool. It felt pretty special and magical. The minecart escape from the leak of mines. I think you're like trying to get the boat past or something somehow. It's been quite a while now, so the finer details of the early game are kind of foggy for me, but I remember an extended minecart escape sequence that was cool, but maybe went on a little bit too long. The steamer was interesting just because, I mean, it has that deck swabbing minigame, which was honestly pretty bad. One of the only minigames, but it's cute. Oh, I will call out here that the scene where Justin is about to sneak on to the boat and he sort of leaves without telling anybody. And then he finds in his like backpack or whatever, a letter from his mother, Aunt or Lily, I should say, kind of revealing that she knew he was going to leave the whole time. And it's playing that little sad segment of the main theme. That scene got to me. I felt something in my cold heart there. It was surprising and sweet. I really liked it. The ghost ship, that was kind of whatever. You meet Fina around there. Fina's kind of a cool character, like I mentioned. Just going up ahead here, the part where Fina gets kidnapped by, what was it, Pacon? And then Justin has to like go to the hideout and fight like a karate dude. That karate dude was probably like the hardest boss in the game, if I'm being honest, other than maybe like the one at the top of the optional dungeon, the Tower of Temptation. I think even Bill said that during the review and I agreed with him. I think I actually died a couple times, maybe. This is getting to gameplay more, but I didn't really have any trouble anywhere in the game otherwise. Let's see what's coming up after that. The Dom ruins, that is, I think you just go there and find more info from Liete. You eventually get more involved with like the military's, the hijinks they're up to. Of course, you find out eventually that they're trying to get spirit stones to revive like an ancient eldritch horror, Gaia, which has already been defeated once before by the Icarians. But I think I can't really remember the reason why, but Lieutenant Lean like frees Justin and Fina. She turns out to be Fina's twin sister, of course, which I guessed before it was revealed, by the way. They both had green hair and Fina had mentioned having a sister somewhere. As soon as she said that, I was like, I bet it's going to be Lieutenant Lean. But anyway, you sort of bust out of the base and have a train escape sequence and kind of stick it to the three sergeant girls, which I thought was kind of a cool part. You eventually have to go through like a foresty area heading towards the end of the world, which is like just a giant wall. At the God of Light Mountain, you sort of learn that Lieutenant Lean is an Icarian, which I thought was really cool. I'm not sure I had guessed that at that point. So I do remember being kind of surprised. So that was a cool detail. Like I said, I just liked how Lieutenant Lean, despite not being a party member, was just sort of like a cool central character. You eventually get to the end of the world, and like I said, it's just like a giant wall, think like Game of Thrones, that they have to climb over. And that was like a really cool part of the game, when you get to the top and you sort of see over the horizon to the rest of the world. That was like an epic moment, I thought. I really dug that. You meet Gadwin on the other side. I didn't really think Gadwin was kind of cool, but he was also like kind of one note. Like he didn't really do anything for me. What I will say is when you get to Typhoon Tower, I think you're trying to stop like the acid rain in Diet Village. That part was cool at the end where Justin and Gadwin have to like sort of make a choice about, okay, are we okay with sacrificing ourselves? It could be either one of us. One of us is going to die. And just the drama of that and Fina being so distressed and how she sort of like slaps Justin afterwards when everybody's okay. That was a really dramatic, cool part for me. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And it sort of came out of nowhere because it's like Bill complained about the structure of the game, how it's like town, dungeon, town, town, dungeon, dungeon, you know, just so on and so on. And it gets kind of old and monotonous. Well, I was sort of feeling that around here, I think. And then all of a sudden you get this big dramatic plot moment at Typhoon Tower. I like that a lot. And so moving on here, you go to a volcano. There's a sacrifice type deal. The twin towers. This was a really cool part because it sort of subverts expectations and the group gets separated. And so Justin gets paired with Lieutenant Lean and Fina gets paired with Colonel Mullen. And so it's like swap the heroes and make them like, you know, come meet the villains in the middle. It was just really cool because it humanized both Lean and Mullen. At this point, you sort of get an idea that maybe Colonel Mullen isn't totally on board with whatever it is that General Ball is planning with the Icarians and all that shit. And I really enjoyed the banter between Lieutenant Lean and Justin and how she like gives him the spirit stone and tells him, you know, run away with this and don't let the military get its hands on it. It's just a cool twist for me. Moving on, you cross the ocean, you go into Disc 2, you eventually meet Guido early, who didn't really do anything for me. They like put him as like this wise merchant character, but I found him kind of boring. You get to Cafu Village, that's where you meet Rap, and like I said, I do kind of like Rap. He's just kind of a good friend to Justin, a good bro type character. You go to the Tower of Doom, and Bill did mention this in the episode, but it's funny that the military set up a tower called the Tower of Doom that petrifies people. It's like the military is not supposed to be overtly evil, but here we are. And honestly, I'm kind of shocked that Colonel Mullen ever let it happen in the first place, but what you gonna do? You start going through lots more dungeons here. There's a couple optional ones, the Soldier's Graveyard and the Castle of Dreams. I remember the Castle of Dreams being kind of cool, just like the aesthetic of the area. But other than that, they were pretty easy. It was annoying not being able to save in the middle of them. But you get to Zil-Paddon, which is like probably the biggest town in the game, maybe. It's just where a bunch of different cultures and races meet up and clash. That was cool. Somewhere in here, you recruit Milda, who is like sort of I don't know how to describe her, like a barbarian woman, like a cave woman. Think like Ayla from Chrono Trigger. I mean, she was a fun character, but again, her voice acting was terrible and she didn't really contribute much to the main story. So take her or leave her. Moving on here, you get to the Zil ruins eventually, and this is where Fina sort of finds out about her powers. I don't really remember how exactly that comes about. But of course, Fina is an Icarian because her twin sister is an Icarian. And the game like kind of treated this like it was supposed to be a shock. And I was just like, was it though? but she ends up getting kidnapped and taken onto like the military's flagship, the Grand Tour. And the characters end up getting up to the Grand Tour because Guido summons like a giant flying manta ray that they ride up, which I thought was just like hilarious because nowhere has there been like any kind of manta ray type thing mentioned before. And it's just like, this is happening now. We have a flying manta ray. But at that point, I guess you're just rolling with it. And the Grand Jour is where I had a huge break in my play sessions, like months before I finally got back to Grandia. So everything from this point forward is a bit fresher in my memory, which is like the last third of the game, I guess, anyway. But anyway, General Ball wants to use Fina and Lieutenant Lean as it, you know, like sacrifices kind of to revive Gaia. And so General Ball tries to like exchange the Spirit Stone for Fina, or get the Spirit Stone from Justin in exchange for Fina. But of course he double crosses him, and you find out he's been assimilated with Gaia, which is just kind of crazy. The part where the ship is self-destructing and it's sort of falling apart around you as you move through it, I thought that part was really cool. Just like the design of it. Pretty impressive for a game that age, just like how they did it visually, I guess. You get to Alent, which I thought was cool, finally. And you meet Liete. There's a bunch of Lietes. You learn about the tablets, the red and blue tablets. Come to think of it, did we ever get confirmed that her tablet turned blue at the end? I mean, you have to assume, but I'm not remembering an actual scene where that was shown, which is kind of crazy if you think about it, because that was Liete's like whole purpose for joining you. And you go to J-Base, and then this is like where the game just starts like slowly snowballing into like a really cool just like climax and shit. I already talked about Lieutenant Lean's sacrifice. She basically buys the others time once she realizes that the Icarians sacrificing themselves is not the way. And Gaia just like sort of eats her, but then she blows up inside of him. It's a really cool part. And I actually did feel something because, like I said, I thought Lieutenant Lean was one of the cooler characters in the cast. So good on her. She's awesome. From here, it's like you're just getting towards the end of the game. There's a scene where Justin's feeling really down. Like he lets Fina go because even after Lean's sacrifice, they still want to use Fina to try to destroy Gaia. And Fina goes along with it because Justin's like not saying the right things. And at this point, after they get separated, Rap and Liete are like pretty harsh on him, like surprisingly so. Liete says, like, I've wasted my time by traveling with you. And Rap's like, we're not friends anymore. And it's like, wow, guys, harsh. I can understand being mad, but whatever. But then, of course, you get like the motivational scene where all the characters that you've met over the course of the game show up and cheer Justin on. You go in, and basically you go into Gaia, just like Valmarin in G2, and you find General Ball, who's now like a weird flying brain monster, and then Gaia. And that's basically it. It ends with Justin and Fina sort of looking on at like Gaia, which has turned into a beautiful tree, and everything's reborn, including inexplicably, I guess the spirits bring back Lean. So she gets a happy ending. She gets to be with Colonel Mullen. I don't know what to think about this because I hate like character revivals because it just cheapens their death/sacrifice in the first place. But in this case, I thought it was cool, I guess, because I did, like I said, I liked Lean, and so I was happy that she was back. That's basically it for the story. Gameplay. We talked about it in the Grandia and Grandia 2 reviews, so I'm not going to go too in deep. I do really like the way the gauge system in battle works, how there's like if you critical an enemy when they're in the act portion of their bar, it will like cancel or counter their moves. That was a really cool mechanic. The way the characters move around the battlefield is generally very cool, unless they get confused by like other characters or enemies being in their way. That's pretty annoying. But I said in the Grandia 2 review that this battle system is like pretty, you know, chef's kiss. I mean, it's awesome. The only thing I really have to knock about it, of course, is the special moves and the magic. I hate the way you learn them in this game, how like the more you use certain elements and weapon types, the more they level up. And I just hate any kind of battle system like that, just because it feels arbitrary and it makes me feel like I have to battle in a certain way that I might normally not do. I much preferred the way it was in Grandia 2, where like, you know, you get the coins or whatever and you choose what you want to level up, more like a skill tree based type thing, I guess. So like what I would end up doing was using spells in every battle, even if I didn't need to just to try to level them up. And it just made the game seem like it slogged and dragged on. Like each battle was a multi-minute encounter, even though it wasn't challenging at all. And there's lots of battles. Like in the last like third or so of the game, I ended up just running past enemies a lot, which I never do in RPGs. I always fight every battle I encounter generally, but it's just like, damn, I would fight like 60 battles in one dungeon and just be like, man, I am done. And of course, another problem with the special moves and the magic, the animation time is just terribly, terribly too long. So, and I think maybe it even got worse in Grandia 2. So I can at least give G1 that edge, I think. But yeah, there's like an ambush system. It's kind of annoying because your whole party follows behind you and they can get ambushed, but what you going to do? I already talked about, as far as non-combat, how I got lost a lot in the towns and the dungeons. I had to use maps. And once I found like a cool website that had maps, it helped me a lot. I remember Deesa having trouble with that too, thinking back on it. One thing I do want to praise is just the conversations with random townspeople. Just like in Grandia 2, this is a highlight because the characters like actually talk back to them. They have multiple things to say, and it just makes the world feel lived in and real. And it's still like, even today, like amongst the best like incidental dialogue I've seen in RPGs. There's a mana egg system that you use to level up your elements. I didn't mind that so much because the mana eggs were plentiful to go around. Let's see here. I liked the storage system. The shops are okay. I kind of wish they were all in one menu, but what you going to do about that? None of the puzzles really tripped me up too bad. The dungeons have a lot of traps in them. Looking down here, I liked the save points, how they healed you and you could sort of abuse the water. Because I hated leveling up water because I never needed to heal and all the water skills are like basically useless to do damage. There is crackling, but that's like a multi-element spell. So... and then one more thing I'll say, the rotating cast of characters. I feel like that sort of detracted from the game. It can be done well to where you end up caring about all the characters, but the way it was done here just made it feel like I never really got to know anybody long enough to really care about any one character too much. And so we're already running a little long here, but I think I've said my main pieces on the things that stood out to me. So let's move on to the battle or the ratings. Right. By the way, I did enjoy how the battle music changed from disc 1 to disc 2. But anyway, so our categories are story, combat, non-combat, graphics, music, overall feel, and then of course our bonus category that is not counted towards our final score, the final boss. So for story, I am going to give it a 7. I think it's a fun romp. It's definitely not a bad story. But there's a lot about it that I don't like. Some of the characters are forgettable. Some of the plot decisions don't make sense. There's no like super memorable character, but there are some memorable scenes, and the plot does like kind of drag in the middle. Like I already named off some of my favorite scenes, but like Sue leaving and the Twin Towers, where you have to work with the anti-villains, I guess. And just Lieutenant Lane's sacrifice. All that was awesome. And so, and it really feels like I said, you're on an adventure, and the whole thing just feels like a Saturday morning anime. And so, I think a 7 is an appropriate score from me. And for the record, Bill gave it a 9 and Rich gave it a 7. Combat. Like I said, the Grandia battle system is awesome. It's one of the best battle systems I've seen, I think. I love how the characters like sort of move and run around in combat. And it's sort of like a hybrid of action and traditional turn-based. I'm going to give it an 8. There are a couple things I don't like about it, namely like the long animation times and just the way that you level up your different skills and abilities. Hated that. And it was a little easy. So for that reason, I took off 2 points. Bill gave it a 10 and Rich gave it a 9. For non-combat, so everything outside of battles, this is where I didn't like it as much. The enemy encounter rate is way too high. I know you can see them on the map, but a lot of times it was just impossible to get around the enemies. I got lost in the dungeons and even the towns frequently, even with the little map markers they give you that don't really help at all. And I didn't find any of the puzzles too invigorating. Any of the traps that go on in the dungeons, and there's not much to like to really break up the monotony of the game, like, you know, town dungeon, like Bill kept saying. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 6. I think this is where the game sort of shows its blemishes personally. Bill gave it a 7 and Rich gave it an 8 for the record. Graphics. So you have to take into account how long ago this fucking game came out. Well, I said it was like 20 or 21 years at the beginning of the review. I dig it. I'm going to give it a 9 because first of all, I'm a sucker for isometric games. I just love that style, that perspective. I don't know why, but it tickles my happy place. And also the sprite work, like the sprites are gorgeous. I just love the way they look on it's fully 3D environments with the sprites running around. I love pixel art. It's hard for me to say if I prefer it to Grandia 2's models because I like the way those look too. But I did end up missing the sprites when I was playing Grandia 2, to be honest. And the spell animations, despite them being long, they're generally pretty cool. I do wish there was like a couple more like animated scenes, like that one scene, of course, the famous scene where Lane sacrifices herself. I really liked how that was like traditionally animated. But yeah, the graphics are spot on, I think, and especially for how old the game is. So yeah, a 9 from me, and Bill gave it a 9, and Rich gave it an 8. Music and sound. I struggle with this one a little bit more because there are some truly fantastic songs on the soundtrack. But there's also a lot of duds. And it's not because of the soundtrack itself, I think. It's just like the choices of the developers, like which tracks to put where. There are a few dungeons where I feel like the track that's playing is like a 6-second loop of annoying environmental noises. It's just super, and these dungeons are long a lot of times, so it's just super annoying. On top of that, I didn't think any of the battle music was super good, if I'm being honest. I liked the main battle theme in Disc 2, but other than that, like, none of the boss themes really stand out to me, unfortunately. Maybe the first phase of Gaia, but it's sad. The town themes, on the other hand, are pretty great. Like, just in general, like, every town has a bop in general. The Noriyuki Iwadare, or whatever their name is, that's... They banged out of the park, and it all sounds very good too. It's like fully orchestrated for the most part. I'm going to give it an 8 just because I feel like they could have, even though the soundtrack itself is good, they could have done better on utilizing it. Some of the cooler tracks you only hear once or twice, but that main theme is great. So an 8 from me, and Bill gave it a 10 and Rich gave it a 9. Overall feel. So this is just like how I felt about the game at the end of the day. I think it's a good game. I truly did enjoy playing it. It did drag in spots, way too many lulls in the story. And I really hated the ability system. I know I said that, but like that was a big sore point for me. And it feels like it could have been cut down a little bit just overall in length. I'm going to give it a 7. Like I said, I liked the game. I might even play it again one day for all I know. But I also don't think it's quite as good as my fellow co-hosts put it, which for the record was a 10 from Bill and an 8 for Rich. I much preferred Grandia 2, like I said. I think I probably gave it like a 9. I'd have to go check, I guess. But I just wish the plot was a little bit more interesting, a little bit more drama-filled and intriguing. I feel like Grandia 2 accomplished that just because it was slightly more mature, if, you know, maybe just as cliched. But who knows? So, final boss, this was a dud for me. It was super easy. I know I'd overgrinded or whatever, but I literally had zero trouble. It doesn't have any dialogue. It's just an eldritch horror. And it's just, it felt kind of anticlimactic, if I'm being honest, like almost like we were rushing towards the end at that point. But what you going to do? I'm going to give it a 4 out of 10. It was easy and there wasn't anything particularly cool about it. Bill and Rich also gave it 4s. So we're on the same page there. Okay, so to recap, Bill's subtotal was a 55 out of 60. Rich's was a 50 out of 60. And so I'll remind you of my scores. Story 7, combat 8, non-combat 6, graphics 9, music 8, overall feel 7, final boss, which doesn't count, a 4. And so that makes my subtotal a 45 out of 60, which translates to a 75% overall. For me, Bill gave it a 92% and Rich gave it an 83%. So before you take my account, my score into account, the RPG Golden Years overall score for Grandia was an 88%. But once you take my score into account, the new RPG After Years score for Grandia 1 is an 83%. I think that's fair, to be honest. I personally felt that Rich and Bill scored it too highly. It's a really good game. It's just like not that good, fellas. So I did not set out to drop the score down at all. That wasn't my intent. But I am happy to provide, you know, more input. Like I said, I am not saying this is a bad game at all. I think anybody who's interested should play it. It's fun, lighthearted. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, let me move on to our outro here. Hard to believe I finally got through Grandia. Feels like I've crossed over the end of the world. All right, so some quick plugs real quick. Next week, which is an episode we've already recorded, but we're releasing it this week, is our interview episode with Generic Fighter, who is one of our longtime listeners and patrons. It was an interesting episode, to say the least, so I recommend giving that a listen. We also did our RPG Club segment on that episode. It's going to be late. You guys are going to hear it right before the next deadline. But what you going to do? So look forward to that. It's episode 42. So some plugs. Please rate and review us. I would very much appreciate it. We would very much appreciate it. It helps the show out a lot. It's one of the best ways to help the show. It's for visibility purpose. If you'd like to reach out to the show, you can email us at rpgafteryears@gmail.com. Any kind of feedback, episode ideas, questions, whatever, we'll take it. Another way to help the show out is our Patreon. Lots of great benefits. You get early episode access, ad-free episodes. You get access to the Aftercast, which is a bonus episode where we're a little bit more freeform and shoot the shit about whatever we want. You can get extra bonus non-RPG reviews. We're currently in the middle of a review for The Last of Us Part 2. Which is turning out to be really well. We have our friend Lauren on that episode, and she's kind of seems to be a natural at it. So I recommend giving that a listen. You get to participate in the nominations and voting for the RPG Club, and there's a lot more benefits. Like you can, if you're at a certain tier, you can haste which game we're going to play next and all that. It's a good time. So check that out at patreon.com/RPGAfterYears. Speaking of the RPG Club. As of this recording, and so it should still be true since I plan on putting this out immediately, the goal is to finish the MIA mission in Route B by December 6th in Nier Automata. So if you're following along during this segment of the club, you should beat Route A and get credits. But then you keep playing. You have to start a new playthrough. You'll be on Route B. There will be an obvious difference right from the beginning. So yeah, look forward to that. Personally, I just finished Route A last night, so I'm looking forward to see what's next. Another plug, we're streaming on Twitch. Normally, we stream every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern, but not this week, just because we're not recording an episode this week. We have one in the backlog. But just keep an eye out on our Twitter and the Discord if you want to know when we'll be streaming. You can participate in the show live. That's at twitch.tv/RPGAfterYears. One more announcement. We have a merch store on Redbubble. You can get mugs, shirts, all kinds of apparel. There's really no limit to the amount of products we have out there. It has our album art, our logo on it. Just different cool things. Magnets, thermoses, cool stuff. So you can find that at redbubble.com/people/RPGAfterYears/explore, or just search RPG After Years on Redbubble. If you want to hang out and talk to us, you can do so by getting on our Discord. The link can be found for that in the show notes or our pinned tweet on Twitter. And I'm so, so thankful for our Discord community. And you can find, speaking of Twitter, the show account is at RPG Years, and you can find me at the Scott Spot. All right. So until next time, I'm Scott. I hope everybody had a very happy Thanksgiving. I ate too much, and I need to go on some runs or something. But with Grandia finally out of the way, it's time to set off on a new adventure. See you guys on episode 42 soon. Bye, and thanks, seriously.